LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everybody. Let's build the energy. Hit the music. Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us, only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, Trevor Pearson from New York, admin of the Brotherhood of Male Witches Facebook group, joining us to share his 30-plus years of experience and study and bringing us today's topic, Herbology 101, Herbs and Magic. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Trevor Pearson. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now let's catch up with our host, Reverend Art. Take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James. And hello, everyone. Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. If we're on the air. You know what that means, that it's Monday again. And Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychics. Make your way on over to the Hoodoo Psychics face page. Drop a comment on their Magic Mondays post and get entered to win a free 15-minute reading with your favorite hoodoo psychic. I'm on there. Reverend James is on there. We're all there for you. So go on over. It's a $60 value. Can't go wrong. So how are things going with you today, Reverend James?
Things are going pretty well. It's kind of a dreary day. We've had some storms and things, and over the past few days, we've been kind of worried about a fawn that decided to take up in the front of our yard. And it seemed like the mother had abandoned it, but it seems like we also found the family, or at least a surrogate one. So we hope that it's okay. Other than that, just trying to relax from the Hoodoo Heritage Festival, trying to gear up into some other things and catch up on some backed up clients and things that need a little bit more focused attention that we were unable to give before. How about you?
The saga of the fawn. We cannot forget the saga of the fawn. Reverend James and I hunting through the woods trying to figure out which way it went. And eventually You know what they say? They say that the mother doe can hear the baby cry. And I was thinking to myself as I'm hiking through the wilderness, how can she possibly hear this? Until I met her, and she was very much aggressive. And Reverend Art learned turn and walk away quickly from the mother deer. If that was any indication of how the weekend went, I'll just leave it at that. I'm really excited for the show today. Our guest and I, we've been chatting for at least a couple months. I'm thinking trying to coordinate a time to make this show happen. And here we are, finally. I've had a chance to watch many of his online videos that he posts live on Facebook, read a lot of his posts and so much information that he shares. It's really, I mean, it's a lot of great stuff, well-researched, well-shared. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on our guest, Mr. Trevor Pearson. Welcome to the show.
Wow, what an intro. thank you. I just got a serious hormone boost. I'm not really sure what hormone did it, but wow. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm an honest guy, and I appreciate when people like my content. You know, and my content is, and sorry to sound salty, but there's no bullshit. I teach people, I try to impart on people what I've been doing for a really long time.
You know, I think I kind of, we were chit-chatting a little bit before the show started, and I think I kind of caught Trevor off guard, because I've actually saved several of his live videos for watch and rewatch. And I think that came as a bit of a surprise, but that's just, you know, it's a testament to really just how well put together it is.
Was it the Tincture videos?
That's one of them.
Yeah, because like that was my breakthrough, like teaching people about tinctures, and I was really surprised that now social media, I'm not a big social media guy. I'm very low key. I have my group, and I create content for my group based on my research and what I'm putting together as my personal notes that will hopefully be a book, part one and part two, at some point. I'm not putting a schedule on myself, but I really appreciate that, man. That's really cool that somebody can see a stupid video that I showed somebody how to make a tincture, and people have really reacted really well to it, and I so appreciate it. It makes me feel really good, and that's why I keep doing it.
Well, I'm a big believer in, you know, praise where praise is due, but you know, let's let our listeners get to know you a little bit better, because I know,
sure,
you know, we've talked, you've been doing so much within the metaphysical community, the spiritual community, for well over 30 years. How'd you get started? How did you find your path?
Probably Tolkien. I read The Hobbit in 1978. It was my first. It was my first book report, and I became enamored with all things Lord of the Rings at that point. So in 1978, I was 10 years old. I read The Hobbit, and I was like blown away. And then I read Lord of the Rings. I read the Silmarillion. I read all of that crap, and I really got entranced in the metaphysical aspect of less metaphysical and more in the fact that the land, the earth around you, is the power of you. You know, you can utilize the powers around you, herbs, plants, the dirt, a pond, those things. Tolkien really instilled in me, like, his appreciation for natural environments and the way he described them really was a clicking point for me.
Huh.
So, you know, by the time 1983 rolled around, just a little insight, I grew up as a child actor. I did a lot of commercials. I did Broadway. I played on Radio City Music Hall for 99 shows. These are things that, like, were, like, building me up to finally realizing that, like, I don't know, like, metaphysical stuff just clicked with me. And being in New York City, I had access to going down to to Herman Slater's shop, the Magical Child down on 9th Street, sorry. And I picked up my first several books sold to me by Herman Slater himself, Lesser Key of Solomon and the sixth and seventh books of Moses.
So just a little, a little light reading early on.
I dove right into ceremonial magic in 1983. So I guess that was the stepping stone.
You know, that's actually kind of interesting. Because now that you mentioned, I've thought back myself, and I've picked out different inspirations for my own path, and you kind of surprised me with the Tolkien thing, and it got me to thinking, because for me it was the Narnia series, I think, that really
My wife Kathy is a huge fan of that series.
Because that was a springboard, and that's I've never flashed back that far.
Well,
I don't
want
to think how far back that is now.
Yeah, but here's another point in that is the Tolkien stuff is what got me into Dungeons and Dragons. So again, by like 1981, like I had a Dungeons and Dragons club that would. Me at the library in my town. And again, there was no direct inspiration, but it was a springboard. It made me realize other things, you know?
So it was almost like the perfect storm of bringing all of these elements together to kind of form just what you've done since then. And you know, it's been a good number of years, well, for both of us, but
you know what's really funny is, like, when that became popular, like Dungeons and Dragons and people, you know, really rereading like the Lord of the Rings, and the Lord of the Rings were super popular in the 60s, especially in the psychedelic generation, but It had a huge influx in the 80s, where it inspired an entire role-playing game. It's a progression of a mentality, you know what I'm saying? And those things influenced me to look into actual 15th century, Galicia. You know, the ancient writings of the basis of ceremonial magic based on Solomon's writings. It was a weird time. But then eventually by the late 80s, then at the back of comic books, you would see ads for, by the, Frosts. Who's that? Gavin and Yvonne Frost. And they used to put, an entire page in the back of a comic book, called like Discovering Witchcraft or something like that. I had the book at one point. Son of a bitch. Boy, if I had it, I bet that would be worth money.
the Church of Wicca, I'm seeing in the chat.
It was basically just like Gerald Gardner's words in this book. And you could get it, you know, for $1.99 in the back of a comic book. And it was just so different back then. Like, you know, you see these guys online now. They're like, yeah, I've been practicing Wicca for 9 years. And I was like, look, the internet is like 20 years old now. So I don't know where you learned that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just different back then. You had to go out and seek out these books and seek out. And I'm going to talk about a couple books, and we are, I promise you, we will get to herbs in a second, but you did ask about my, where the inspiration came from. So that is, you know what, we're going to call it the short story at this point. So, you know, fast forward 1990, I got initiated, basic Wicca, Gardnerian, and then a year later I got another year and a day in Strega, which for you guys who are not familiar with that term, that's basically Italian folklore traditional witchcraft. And then probably within the next 10 years, I pretty much switched right over to traditional witchcraft, basically of the Welsh traditions. Don't ask me why. It thinks with me, and that's what I'm doing now. There you go. Ask another question.
I'm pretty sure as soon as you said Strega that my friend JD, he's another member of AIR, of Italian descent, and very, very much into the history, the folklore of, you know, Italian folk magic and
well,
such.
I'm in North Jersey. So
he's originally from New York City, I think. But no, wow. I'm sure he stood up and was very excited to, it was like, represent.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, now he has Hoodoo House Detroit. But yeah, originally, and JD, I know you're in the chat, but if I'm wrong on the New York City thing, I apologize, but I seem to remember. Oh, Staten Island.
Hey,
he confirmed.
We have any questions, or you want to go forward?
Oh, nothing just yet, but you know what? As you and I talked about it, and I know that this is not a topic that we're going to be able to even put a sizable dent in one show. So I'm thinking, Reverend James, let's queue up some announcements here, and we'll jump into our announcements, and then we'll jump into our topic, and
go, brother.
Go herb crazy. Sound good? All right.
LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurement Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, the Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays, 5 to 6, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Thursdays, 1 to 2, and Blue Flag Root Radio with Lady Muse, Fridays, 7 to 8, all time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern. All of our shows are available in archives at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, where you will see them listed by title and episode and with clickable links. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com, and by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. And during our little station break, some stuff popping up from the chat. Miss Kat, Catherine Ironwood, says, my Sicilian grandmother also practiced stregaria, but not the modern neo-pagan version, the actual Sicilian folk magic. Aha. Had a couple questions for you, too.
Okay.
But was Merlin at all an inspiration? Did you know Dorian Valiente or other early Wiccans?
No. I'm not an Arthurian dude at all. My wife is. And she taught me, like, every Arthurian legend came late in my life. That was not part of my inspiration at all. No.
Okay. And do you have anything that, did you have anything
but
to
I
do
love,
with the...
I love swords. So
I think we all have to have at least one.
Yeah. I have a shitload.
Well, post some pictures on
I got an
on
axe,
Facebook.
Man. I got a battle axe.
Okay, that's hardcore weaponry now.
I got a mandolin and a battle axe sitting next to each other on the wall.
That's an image. Another couple quick questions.
Go ahead.
Did you have anything to do with the PSA network, or what about the Church of All Worlds or California Line Gardnerians?
Can you repeat that?
Says, did you have anything to do with the PSA network?
No. I haven't been involved in any networks, pagan networks, or anything. No.
So no churches, no other groups. Okay. Are you familiar with the OTO? Because it seems you're wearing a unicursal hexagram.
Yes, it is. That was handmade, custom made in wax and then cast in 1991, that was. And if you notice, it's a pentagram in the middle instead of the standard four-leaf clover. I opted for the pentagram. I actually had this made and cast, and the guy who made it died 3 or 4 years later, and I tried to get the original mold from his family, and no one ever got back to me. So that is an incredibly – that's done in sterling silver. It's a stunning piece, and it's literally – priceless to me.
Awesome. Well, we do have one more question and then we'll jump into herbs. Do you believe in animism?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I have a pond. And there's something about having, I built this pond back in 2005. It's about a 2,000 gallon pond. It's 22 feet by 10 feet, and it has a 22 foot stream from a waterfall at the top. I built it. I engineered it. I literally dug it out with my hands. All I can tell you is when you connect doing something that is important to you, that's the connection, you know, to me. I don't know if that's a good answer, because to me it's kind of a weird question. It's like, I don't know, rephrase that.
Well, I'm thinking that we may have kind of covered it. Falcon Diviner, if you
well,
if
I think
you have
I think
a...
another way to just to rephrase that might be: do you believe, for instance, as a segue into herbalism, that all things have a type of inherent living type spirit? So, for instance, whenever you're working with herbs, do you work with the spirit of the herbs, or is it just the inherent herb itself that has the power, not a spirit behind it?
I'm not going to say that I believe one thing or another, but all I can say is they give off vibrations. Same thing with, like, just even digging a hole in the ground. It gives off a vibration, and it, you know, the term grounding. Dig a hole. That'll ground you. You'll sleep good tonight, too. But yes, I do feel my plants know me. I do feel the things I grow, and I do feel that everything we sow on our land understands that we're part of each other's lives. So, yeah, that's animism. I mean, no.
Excellent. Well, you know what? Without further ado, let's jump on into our topic. And I'm just going to let you take it away. I know there's so much to go from, and just I'll let you start from the beginning.
it's a rabbit hole. There's no doubt about it. And
that's true.
You go ahead. Go Google it. You know, Google herbs Wicca. You'll be completely swamped. Herbs.
Actually, in the lead up to today, I was actually looking online and thought I'd Google a couple things just to see what would pop up. And
it's impossible.
Yes. to distill that down to a level of coherency, it's overwhelming. You know, I have my go-to references, you know, which literally is a handful of books and individuals that I've had the fortuitousness of coming across in social media land, like yourself. But there's just so much. And how does one cut through all of that bullshit?
Well, it's funny, because everything I've learned have been from books. Back in, I'm sorry, you know, I hate to say it, 30 plus years ago, you know, it's not anything I learned on the internet.
Right.
It's stuff that I've looked up. I have books that I recommend. They're not for everybody. I mean, I hear people that I love, they're like, oh, it's a bunch of crap. You know, shut up. let's talk about the first step. Is if you're a beginner, you haven't used herbs. You have herbs in your kitchen, most likely. This is what I talk about as kitchen herbs. Kitchen herbs are awesome because they almost always smell amazing if you just use them in something. I'm talking about thyme and rosemary, chamomile, basil, mint, you know, all these super easy to find, like all of the things that I just said, you probably have in your kitchen.
And you would be right.
Huh?
And you would be right.
Yeah, of course, because everyone has these things, oregano. You have all the ingredients to use within metaphysical practice or ritual or compounding or making a tincture or making infused oil. All of these things you can do. You can, and they're easy to do. Now, I'm a huge fan of growing your own stuff. I grow, what do we grow? We grow thyme, we grow rosemary, oregano, chamomile, roses, basil, lavender, mint. We have four different mints. Fleabane, yarrow, mugwort, milkweed, even half the list probably. Pokeweed. I have a pokeweed that is about 6.5 feet tall right now.
Nice.
And we're not even into July. It's 6.5 feet tall. This is going to feed birds for 3 months when it gets cold. It's all about connecting. If you're going to grow your stuff, connecting with what you're growing for its intent, called empowering or enchanting. And I guess to me, if you're going to grow stuff, that's step one, is to create a relationship with the plant, and as it becomes what you're going to use within magical practice, that you've already empowered it. You grew it.
So would you say it's more, so it's connecting with the energy of the plant. So it's, you're in, you know, it's kind of like a symbiotic sort of a relationship.
I practice what's referred to as traditional witchcraft, and that's about connecting to the land. So when the point is when you grow the stuff yourself and utilize it, it's of course going to be more potent. It's going to have more meaning. It's going to resonate vibrations that what you're looking for within a magical practice, you know?
So that makes a lot of sense because, you know, over the years, and I mean, I do, well, Reverend James and I both use a lot of varied herbs in our business and in our personal practices. But there have been so many people that I've come across over the years that are like, you know, they get into herbs because it's they feel either they have to, or they do it because it's cool, or they think it's cool, they feel it's cool, whatever. Throw your own adjective in there. And then they're like, but I don't feel like it's working for me. And it kind of goes back a little bit to that, to that, you know, building that relationship is, you know, go ahead.
Like if you can't grow the most basic of herbs, then you should probably give up. I mean, it's not that hard. It's really not. I mean, you fill a thing with soil and you put them in there, and, or you sow them from seed, which I'm big fan of sowing things from seed, and you grow them, and there's no issue.
But it really, though, kind of speaks to me a little bit, taking what you've said, that, you know, to build that connection, that relationship with what they're doing is, you know,
right.
when you have taken the time to sow the seeds, raise the plants, you know, get your soils perfect and things of that nature and all of these steps, you've built in a passion to it. You've built a very strong connection to it.
100%, you've not built in passion, you've built in power. You are enchanting, you're empowering your herbs simply by raising them. And then, you know, there's the whole other thing, then you need to dry them if you're going to use them in compounding and stuff like that. So you dry them and you cut them and with respectfulness and understanding that I raised you to give me this. That's the whole point. It's a symbiotic relationship.
So, okay. So from this beginning sort of relationship building standpoint, I'm kind of on the same lines. What, because you mentioned some books that you felt were kind of foundational, but weren't everybody's cup of tea. Well, okay, cup of tea. They're, you know, little herb pun, I guess. You know, what kind of books would be good to kind of build from this launch pad, I guess you could say?
Okay, I would say off the bat, the first book for a beginner would be Cunningham's Encyclopedia of Herbal Magic. I refer to this. This is literally what I'm tapping on. This is the book. I'm not even kidding, because I prepared for tonight bookmarks in this book specifically because this book is so good. I will say Cunningham put in references in the back of this book considering gender, feminine herbs, planetary rulers by every planet, and then elemental rulers, magical intention. This book is wonderful because Scott did all of this work when nobody was looking. I was lucky enough to have met Scott once. He was a very nice man. It was probably 1991, early 1991. I mean, he died in 92. So, yeah, probably early 91 or late 90. Very nice guy. But I would absolutely recommend this to anyone who is a beginner. Again, Cunningham's Encyclopedia 2.
We actually have a copy of that ourselves.
Yeah, it's a great – dude, but it's such a great book because the illustrations are awesome. It's just a great book, and it has a ton of stuff in the back. If anybody gets past 200 pages, all right, you're cool in my book.
So what's next on the herbal magic shelf bookshelf?
Okay. Sure. Well, we talked about kitchen herbs. What about resins? You like patchouli? Not patchouli. Frankincense, myrrh. Technically, they're herbs because it's a sap of an herb. Dragon's blood, good example. These are exotic elements. These are not what you can grow in your backyard.
Right.
Are they bad? No, they're not bad. you can get them and use them. They're wonderful. I love resins. Resins are 90% of most of my personal incenses. But I love my homegrown stuff, and I try to incorporate that as much as possible. Now, beyond resins, like, you know, you can burn any of that stuff. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you burn incense?
Almost every day, and actually, you know, when the need arises, you know, the little charcoal disc with some choice herbs for various purposes.
Exactly. That's the whole point. So my jumping off from kitchen herbs is you can literally take anything that's in your kitchen and make an amazing incense. And I guarantee you, if you have cinnamon, any incense you make will be amazing. but rosemary, that is my go-to herb. That is as cleansing, if not more. No, I can't say that, but it's as cleansing as, in my opinion, as sage. Care for the smell of sage. But when I smell rosemary burning, I love it. You stick my personal altar incense is rosemary, 50% rosemary, 50% myrrh. Try it. It is a cleansing smell. It smells like a wet forest and really good soap.
You know, I actually just stocked back up on myrrh, and now I'm going to have to. This is going to happen tonight. I'm going to be trying this. It was actually kind of funny that you mentioned cinnamon too, because I mean,
be careful with cinnamon. It will mess you up.
Yes, well ventilated room.
Yes,
but that's actually one of the things. I know you had seen the advertisements for it. We were just fresh off of the Hoodoo Heritage Festival, just last week.
Yeah, I saw that.
And my segment on it was business magic, and actually the herb mixture that I had as part of my workshop was cinnamon, allspice, and thyme. And
You should have stuck some patchouli in there.
Well, it was the whole thing was starting like on a shoestring budget. People could just easily get from a grocery store.
No,
I get it. No, because honestly, I had a list of about like 20 different things that I could put in there, and I'm like, wait, no, this is rein it in, Reverend Art, rein it in. But you know, it's one of those things that I didn't mention it during the festival, and now in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, you could even put a little bit on some charcoal and put it on a money altar, or you know, use it during any kind of business magic.
Burning
money drawing.
Children. I do.
Very nice. Very nice.
You don't have a big cauldron?
We have a few cauldrons, actually.
I got a big one. I got like a five quart one.
Okay, you definitely have me beat on that.
No. Don't get me wrong, man. It took me 20 years to find this thing. And I got it cheap. But, yeah, you could burn stuff in it. Good. So what are you growing?
Oh, us personally?
Yeah.
And James, you might have to jump in here because there have been so many things. We have rue, agrimony.
I don't.
Well, lavender.
I'm sorry, I totally missed the question.
Herbs we've grown. There's been rue, agrimony, lavender, thyme,
lemongrass, calendula,
lemon verbena, basil,
lemon balm,
rosemary,
bee balm.
Yes, monarda. Wow. I'm totally drawing a blank right now. A lot of, honestly, a lot of the stuff that we
echinacea
utilize, yes, that's going very well right now. A lot of the things that we utilize, we wildcraft. You know, it's things that are available around us. Like fleabane is throughout the yard. We can go just walk down the street and get raspberry leaves and so many, just so many things that really the region provides for us that you can't go wrong, you know, with doing the wild crafting.
Yeah,
but
that's perfect, man. That was amazing. Yeah, man. Absolutely.
I'm trying to think of all the things. There's bone set and
we have patches of fleabane. They are incredibly good for your yard. They give off huge amounts of nitrogen, and the pollinators love them. And it's a perfect plant. It and they look nice. We have two patches.
So, okay. So we know Cunningham is a good start-off point for getting into...
Let's talk about the exotic. Like, I was talking about cinnamon. Cinnamon is an exotic. You can't grow that yourself. Star anise, you could maybe grow it, but... Probably not. Nutmeg, you're not going to grow nutmeg. Saffron, you probably won't. Cloves, very hard. Bay leaves. Bay, probably most people can grow. You're in Southern California, right?
I'm in North Carolina.
Where's our...
Because Reverend James and I are in Western North Carolina.
Okay. I got you.
Our friends from Lucky Mojo, however, keep us very well apprised of everything California.
That's awesome. So a lot of the exotics, you're not going to be able to grow yourselves, but like bay leaves are fantastic for writing on like intentions. Glyphs, or sigils, any of those things, and then burning them, like bay leaves are fantastic. So I love that in my practice in herbalism. I love that using mugwort. I mean, I have a ton of mugwort that just grows around my property, so I have it around all the time. Fantastic cleansing herb. It really has a lot of the same effects of lavender, in my opinion. I could try that one. But to me, rosemary, that's the golden one. You can add rosemary to any incense, and it will be amazing.
We're starting out along the herbal path. How important is it to kind of jump into these, the more exotic herbs, or is it feasible, you know, at an early stage in development, an early stage of learning to kind of, I guess, go with the kitchen herbs?
Yeah.
And still be productive.
Yeah. You know, that's totally easy and fantastic. Yes, I did it. We all did it, you know, and then we grow old and we buy exotic ingredients. That's just the way that goes. But yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to impress upon people that, like, you can grow your own stuff. And I'm not saying don't buy frankincense and myrrh instead. Like, we're going to buy that stuff. But, you know, when you grow your stuff, it's just an amazing feeling. It can't be described, honestly. So connecting with the land, that was – but now, this was part one, right, we're talking about?
Oh, yeah, we can definitely go further
in
a future date.
I told you this is a rabbit hole. I know this is a rabbit hole. But you know what? I'll leave you with this. You can get easy herbs and use all these things to do all these different things. It's not that hard. Anyone can do it. And everyone should do it. I mean, if it's going to be part of your practice, you know?
This brings up a question that I saw come through in the chat. Is because I know I've seen the pictures of the evolution of the herbs gardens that you've had going on. But what if you are in an apartment or someplace that, you know, it's not quite as easy, you know, maybe living in a skyscraper in New York City? To grow your own herbs. What tips and tricks and ideas do you have for those?
Yeah, I did a tutorial last year on how to do I'm trying to figure out what they call this type of planter. It's long. It's about 11 inches one way and then about 16 inches another way. So it's, you know, and that's what I do my chamomile in. And I did a whole tutorial all you really do is put some rocks on the bottom of whatever you're planting this in. Then you put the same, you know, you put your good soil and put your plants in, and you water it. That's it. That's the entire process. You know.
Are there any herbs that aren't container friendly?
Not really, because they're considered weeds.
You know, because I actually have a vested interest in finding this out, because I have friends that can pull off planting lavender here, there, everywhere, pots, planters, window boxes, what have you. When I lived in Pennsylvania, I could grow a 6-foot bush of lavender. For some reason, I have not been able to get lavender to take since I've moved to North Carolina.
All right. Lavender does not like planters. They like the ground. So what you have to do is either get a huge planter that the lavender won't feel constricted. Sorry, that's that's my best advice.
Yeah, it's been a struggle. I actually, the one summer, I must have gone through probably a good 15, 16 lavender plants. I put them in the ground. I put them where they would be happy and get the sun and the soil and all that kind of stuff that they would like, and nothing. And that was a Reverend Art question. That was just for me.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Do you have any experience? Have you seen these new things that they put out that hang on the wall? That it's kind of like a garden that just hangs on your wall in a living room, kitchen, where have you?
Like a hydroponic. That's like a hydroponic thing. Those are cool, actually. No, I have no experience in them. They look cool, though.
It's one. It's something I've seen it advertised recently, and I thought to myself,
Yeah, I've seen them.
That could be a very good sort of option for those that are living in the, you know, in a high rise or someplace.
There are tons of hydroponic ways of growing your own food in cities. It's not cheap. Those are expensive systems to put together, but basically you would be set for like 15 years of whatever greens that you could possibly grow, which is very cool to me.
I mean, I've seen some that, you know, they have the special lighting and everything to stimulate the plants.
You don't even need special lighting for most, like, Caesar-type lettuces. You don't. And they have a huge amount of nutrients. They're very cool. I love the whole hydroponic idea, man. I don't know why we haven't implemented this in the States. It's ridiculous.
You know, there's actually a question in the chat that this is something I've often wondered, because I tend to do the dehydrating of herbs kind of more of a natural way. Do you see a difference between using an actual, like a dehydrator, or going old school?
I've never used a hydrator, a dehydrator. Sorry. Years ago, I did a slow where you do like 200 degrees in the oven for 2 hours. Don't do that. The best thing to do in my mind, you get a big cardboard box and you cut it short so you have like only 2 inches all the way around. And then you put whatever herbs you want to dry. Last time I did this, I did it with roses and rosemary. And I just threw everything in. I put it in the sun for 2 hours.
Is that covered, uncovered?
It was bone dry. It was bone dry in 2 hours. I was like, okay, now I know how to dry stuff.
And did you have it covered, or was it uncovered?
No. Right in the sun. It was ridiculously perfect. Like, every time I did it, everything was dried perfectly within 2 hours. And I was like, okay, this is the way to do this. So that's how I've been doing it.
I've tried several different methods myself. One, and I tried paper bags, like, you know, what they used to give you at grocery stores before plastic.
Right.
And I made the mistake of kind of pinching the top of it closed and ended up with kind of moldy herbs.
Mold. Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like, if you're going to dry anything out, you can't put it in a situation where mold can come. The beauty of, like, just sticking it in a piece of cardboard, which will draw out the moisture of whatever's on it under a sun. It's perfect. It works perfectly. There's no better way to do it. I mean, you could use a dehydrator. I mean, of course you can. But you can use the sun and a piece of cardboard, you know?
No fancy tools needed.
Yeah, right. I don't get it. Whatever. I'm not on TikTok.
So, okay, I know you are very prolific with, like, tincture and things of that nature.
Wait, of what?
Tinctures and stuff and things, you know, things of that nature. How important is the use of herbs in spell casting? Would you say?
In my practice, it's pretty important because I use it. I'll either use my herbs to make a tincture, and we can talk about that later. Make an infused oil, which I don't do that often, but I do every once in a while. And I use them, of course, to dress candles, ritual candles, if I'm going to do that particular type of work. They can also be used, of course, in poppets, satchels. I want to talk real quick about if you're going to grind your herbs for a ritual use or esoteric use. The grinding part can become the cleansing and powering part. And using a mortar and pestle, like, can be really a really embracing part to connecting with the herbs that you're using for a particular action. I know some of the older guys will know what I'm talking about, but, you know, these are the things, like, it's the empowerment, the herbs. It's not the herbs themselves. So
when you say empowerment, do you mean more like activation?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Kind of like calling them to work.
Look, you can even charge them the way you would crystals in the moonlight or the new moon. Last night was the new moon. I actually did a couple things last night. I charged things under the new moon. Yes, I'm weird.
I know several that do.
So, I don't know where you guys are going at this point. You want to, I don't know if you had questions from the guys or no.
Oh, that was actually, we've been kind of peppering them in here and there as we go. but no, that was one of the questions is, you know, working with spells and the importance of herbs in spell work. You did list off quite a lot of different methods, and, you know, I think Hollywood kind of has people thinking along the lines of it's mostly incense, and that's about it. But herbs are so much more.
I think like doing teas, like if you get good at doing teas, like I can go out in the back right now and get a couple different types of mints and some chamomile, little sprig of rosemary to throw in some pepper, and you do a tea that with intention. That that's traditional witchcraft. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You're doing it with intent. And that is exactly the formula for every brew and incense and oil. You put together the different parts that you want to come together, and it's just all the different parts make the mass of your intention. So I don't know. It's probably a weird way of putting it, but
no, it definitely, it's making sense to me. So more or less, it's finding the right herbs to match the intention with what you're looking
again,
to accomplish.
You get right back into the rabbit hole. Do you want to look into the planetary elements of each of those herbs you're using and using them within the right day, in the right hour? It's a rabbit hole, man.
Yeah, I honestly, for myself, I don't go down that rabbit hole that much, you know, and I know a lot of people are interested in that. Because I, for me, life tends to get in the way of timing and things like that. And it wasn't until very recently that I even was able to effectively conjecture and put astrology, the use of astrology, into my workings, in as much as, you know, I have to say a huge thank you to Miss Kat Ironwood for astrology, her book Astrology for Root Workers, which is not the topic for tonight, but, you know, we're talking a little bit about timing, you know, when you talk about, you know, the moon phases and things of that nature. It's very difficult sometimes. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people that are new to using herbs in their magical practices get overwhelmed, because they're like, they'll see the hardliners on the internet to say, oh no, you have to pick this on a Tuesday when the moon is doing this and that.
Well, I'm pretty happy that I have not experienced any of that, because I'm not really involved in any online magic groups. I have my three.
It's something that I see a lot, and that's actually in the kind of the no nonsense, no bullshit way that you break things down in your videos. That's one of the one thing that I find to be kind of refreshing, and it allows practitioners to dive into the use of herbs without, I don't know, feeling like they're doing it wrong or they're just effed up from the beginning.
Dude, I really appreciate you, man. I really appreciate that. My point to doing my videos was to say to everybody, you can do this. Everybody can do this. This is not impossible, you know? And you don't have to spend a boatload of money to do it. One of my video segments was called Witchcrafting on a Budget. Right up my alley, man. I'm a Jersey guy.
And I think that's important for, you know, the listeners and the participants in the chat and everything tonight to kind of know, is that you don't have to spend thousands of dollars on this, that, and the other thing.
You don't.
Ironically, again, this is a conversation that I had not too long ago with astrology for root workers is these systems that people have overcomplicated. Like, you're doing it for herbs, where Miss Kat really brought astrology back to everybody. It's like it was just like, here, everybody,
right.
Everybody can do this. And
right. Yeah, you're right, man. I mean, look, I don't have anything new to bring to the conversation per se. What I'm working on is just trying to get people to understand certain things. And that's a hard thing, man.
Well, you know what they say is everything old is new again. And we're really in a time where a lot of this knowledge is being rediscovered. And as such, you do have these individuals that attempt to step in as the gatekeepers and such that.
Yeah, fuck them guys. Sorry.
No.
All right.
That's kind
Art,
of a.
Art.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna wrap up my thing because, again, what I was saying about the exotics. The cinnamons, the star anise,
okay,
nutmeg, saffron, cloves, all those things. You're not going to grow them yourselves. So just buy them as cheap as you can. Next time, we're going to talk a little bit about the poison path.
You know, that's one thing that a lot of people don't want to touch, and I'm really looking forward to that, is there's always the curse side of magic.
Oh,
we don't really talk about that.
I can tell you that from my experience, that's all I can tell you.
I think that will be a very cool discussion. We're not like just setting that up now or anything. But
no,
that's,
we just did.
No, I think, you know, really, I appreciate how you break things down to the basics. You know, you can go online and see somebody has like, I've experienced this before myself, where, say, frankincense, you know, it's like this premium, ultra high grade, yada, yada, whatever, premium frankincense. And if you want your spell work to work and you want your, you know, all your incenses to be powerful, you have to use this. And that's, I like how you bring it down to, you know, buy what fits the budget, buy what works. You don't have to go and break the bank.
No, you don't.
Trying to really just practice.
Can I call you Reverend from now on?
if you would like.
All right. Like when we meet, I'm going to call you Reverend, and you can't be like, oh, dude, that's fucked up.
No, that's perfectly fine. I've been called many things over the years, but
all right.
You know, we actually have a couple questions from the chat for you.
Go ahead. Hit me.
You know, when you make tinctures and teas, what is your expiration date methodology?
Oh, on a tea, a day. A tincture, forever.
What about infused oils?
Oh, it's really funny. I have notes here on infused oils. If you guys don't know what an infused oil is, you would basically take a bunch of herbs or flowers and put it in a vegetable-based oil. Let it sit there for approximately 8 months and shaking every day. You have to shake the bottle every day. That's how to make an infused oil that actually works. I don't recommend it.
You know, a lot of people actually ask, too, about with infused oils, if you can use fresh herbs or if they need to be dried herbs.
No, never use fresh herbs. It will turn into mold in 3 days. It needs to be dried. There's a point. There's a reason why the ancient people used dried herbs.
So there's, okay, that, 'cause I've seen some recipes that have talked about using the fresh herbs, and I always thought about that myself, going, you know, why, how are you going to keep this from growing mold? But they never mentioned adding any sort of preservative.
If you use it quickly, there's no problem. But like a tincture, the beauty of a tincture is like 2 years later, it's like so perfect. I don't know. My experience.
Very interesting. So that's.
I'll send you a picture. I have an entire shelf of tinctures that I made like 2 years ago, and they're all perfect. I use them on candles. I use them. You got to flick it around. That's where the magic happens.
Very nice. Is there. Okay. Now, I know I've watched your tincture video.
Yes, sir.
When it comes to is okay, are tinctures like your preferred method of using herbs in magic?
Oh, no. No, I burn way more herbs than I do on tinctures. What I use tinctures for is candles. That's my main release of the tinctures. I will take several different tinctures and make a particular blend for a particular deed and put that on a candle, rough it up a little bit, put another different oil on it, and then roll it in a herb of choice suited to the outcome. Works so far.
So, okay, also, because we're talking about dressing candles.
Sure.
The herbs that you roll the candles in, is there a point that you feel that it's like overkill, that you've tossed too much, like
I don't like when people put too much herbs on candles. That's terrible. That becomes a fire issue.
How about from a magical side of it too? I mean, the practical side. Actually,
well,
I did a whole thing.
Do you need the fire? Maybe you do. You know, that's a good point. That's a good point. I mean, no. I mean, you made a good point. Like,
actually,
if you need a hard fire element in your magical working, that would work.
Just be intentional and prepared.
Well, you know, if you prepare.
Although, you know, okay, I want to back up a little bit too, because I'm very much interested in how you go about harvesting your herbs and such. Are you one that works by the planets, by the moon, in
no.
timing?
No, I would like to though, and that may be a step in my life going forward. But no. I cut my shit down whenever I want. I know it's terrible.
Well, that's kind of like for myself. Even I just there's just so much life that gets in the way of. I've even set alarms, like alerts on my phone to remind me to, it's like to go, you know, go do this at this time. And the alarm will go off. I'll be in the middle of something, not able to do that, but it hasn't.
I'll tell you, man, turn your phone off. Turn your phone off for 2 hours. It'll change your fucking life, man.
I actually, I have to agree with this because I've gotten into the habit. Even today, when I went to go out and plant herbs this afternoon, I left the phone on my computer desk and walked away to it about 4 hours later, but. No, I like to put it out there, though, that there are those of us that aren't, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, you know, our stuff still works. Our spells work. Our tinctures work. Our oils work. These things still work, despite the fact that, you know, we're not always able to do this by the moon, by the sun, at this time of day or that time of day. Because I think it's important for people, especially just embarking on their journey, to know that if you can, great, you're not excluded from the path. You just experiment and... You find what works for you.
Oh, fuck that. Do what you want.
that's kind of advice that I usually give. But although within reason.
I'm sorry.
Within reason on the do what you want side of things.
My wife's gonna yell at me now.
No, there are some things that we still keep in tradition. You know, there are still some traditional things that don't change, but there are some things that I feel prevent people from blossoming, prevent people from really jumping on their paths, and.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, like with these shows, that I really try to let people know is there are other ways. Just because person X, Y, or Z is screaming from the rooftops that, you know, this is the way. Not to go to Star Wars on anybody. What was that, Mandalorian? I can't remember now. but there are many paths, and in the chat we just got the way is Taoism with a big smile.
Hey, guess what we're gonna talk about next time?
What's that?
We're gonna talk about medicinal uses, planetary alignment, grinding and powdering, poppets and satchels.
That's, I just sat here and thought to myself, are we going to be able to fit all of that into an hour and a half show?
I'm so happy this is not Facebook.
You know,
no, I mean,
we're
FaceTime. Time I'm in.
Like, everybody would have just saw Reverend Art with the deer caught in headlights look for a good solid moment going. It's like I couldn't breathe. I'm like, can we fit all that? I'm damn well ready, willing to try. You know, there's actually there's so many different ways that we can talk about herbs and things of that nature. And we're coming up on the end of minute here, Mark. I'm looking forward to sitting down. We're definitely going to we'll sit down and we'll hammer out what we can fit into another show. And people just have to stay tuned to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook and Instagram. And we will let you know when the next show is going to be, Mr. Trevor
All
Pearson.
Right, let me know, man. That's awesome. Wow, you guys got so much feedback tonight.
Well, that's all the time we have for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening. Until next time we meet, keep the magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Trevor Pearson from New York of the Brotherhood of Male Witches, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when our special guest from Hoodoo House Detroit and the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers will be J.D. from Detroit, Michigan, with a discussion on the Doctrine of Signatures. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystic Mages and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and in the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics Thursdays and Fridays from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Saturdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystic, Mages, and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. From all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics, Mages, Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at this same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thank you once again for Trevor Pearson for joining us today. We'll be definitely talking soon. We'll see everybody next week when my good friend JD, Hoodoo House Detroit, coming back to share some information on the Doctrine of Signatures. Kind of goes very well with tonight's show, too. Have a wonderful week, everybody.